Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, it's the 19th day of June. It's going to be a busy day for both of us today. Long day.
It is. Yeah, we've got almost, fortunately, Juneteenth is now a university holiday, and so our players have voluntary workouts today. In the past, they've been attended at almost 100%. So they're still working. They're up there right now. I was over there earlier with coaches, and then now it's, the players are kind of going about their thing with the strength staff. But, yeah, we had our No Limits camp yesterday. Training still for the players today. You and I sit here this morning doing this podcast on Friday morning. And then tonight we're at Peculiar Ales for, is it Dad's Night Out?
Dad's
is that what
Night
we've been
Out.
Calling
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So obviously dads of kiddos that are autistic get together. This is our second year doing this. We'll see how it goes. But always enjoy the opportunity to get together. And it's an interesting thing, because dads... Carmen, who puts this on, the NoCo Autism Connection, they have mothers' events all the time where they're getting together, and mothers really, they get together and they talk about stuff. My wife, the amount of people that she's communicating with on a daily basis. Yeah. You and I, honestly, that's the most, as far as a connection with two other dads with a kid with autism, other than that night out, this is the most kind of connection we get, or I get anyway, when I talk about this. So it's always kind of... maybe more difficult for dads to go out to these kind of things. So it's more of just a casual grab a couple of beers and maybe talk football, and who knows how these things go. But they're always kind of interesting, and I look forward to it. Last year was a really good time.
Me too. And it's almost like a warm-up. It seems like it's always right after this No Limits camp, which is just to review, a special needs oriented camp, football camp, but all of our sports now on campus have got involved, and they do each one does like a booth. So these kids show up, and it's almost like a carnival with mostly football and mostly football players hosting each special needs kids. And we kind of try to find out what the kid lights on and what they are having fun with. And then we meet them on their terms. And that's it's such a great learning experience for our players. But because the kids gravitate towards the players so much, I don't really have a rule. These kids don't come to be let me be coached by the coach. That's not really it. Some of them come and say hi, and maybe their parents asked them to or something. But for the most part, I'm going around and talking to parents, and they usually have the same question because I really am curious, and it's such a conversation starter for parents like us that are dealing with unique, special situations, whatever you want to say it. But the question is just kind of what are you dealing with? What are some of the challenges that you have? And it's such an eye-opener because all these kids are so different. And I might look over at say, which one is your child? And then they say, oh, there's two, the brother and sister that are right there. And it looks fairly, quote-unquote normal.
Sure.
And then they share with me actually what's going on at home and all the challenges maybe it took just to get there that day.
Yeah.
And eye-opening, and it's a fellowship and a camaraderie that I really enjoy. So I'm looking forward to tonight.
I am too. And as far as the No Limits camp, it's all because you guys had that just a few days ago, right?
Right.
And
it was yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
wow.
Thursday morning.
And I'm getting my days all. I saw a lot of posts from people I know that were out there too. So that was great. And that's something that's a goal of ours is to get. So with Gavin, this kid is. He's on the go nonstop, and direction is very difficult and things like so. The goal is for us to do this hopefully next year. It's amazing talking with other parents, other dads, whatever. And sure, there's connections, there's similarities. You can, your kid does that too. Interesting. But then there's a lot of differences too, just depending on who you are. And that's what's really, there's something about it that it's a supportive thing, where it's just, okay, you're going through interesting things. neither good nor bad, neither worse nor better necessarily, but sometimes it's just nice, not necessarily nice, but just good to be able to have some of those other shared experiences.
Would it be fair, would you agree with this if I said that the similarity that we parents of special needs kids have is the isolation?
Mm.
Like we often have to be isolated because of maybe the acting out of our children or and also just the lack of understanding.
Yeah.
Even family, like for me, because I am in the coaching profession, you know, I'm not living in my hometown. And so family comes and visits, you know, and we stay in touch. But they don't see on a daily basis, you know, what we deal with. And I think that, you know, to get that group of parents, there were parents at this camp yesterday morning that were kind of sharing their stories, tears in their eyes of happiness to see their kids interacting with Division I athletes, Division I football players, you know, that it just doesn't happen for those kids.
No. And I think, the isolation also, for me, it's like the everyday conversations that are just normal for everyone else. You know, so we're doing we tried school and everything, but for Gavin, it was very difficult. So we're doing kind of the homeschool, the meet them where they're at kind of thing, because he's constantly on the go. So we have to find ways to get education mixed in with his this kid is, he's up from, once he's up, this kid is, he's like a hummingbird. He's moving nonstop.
Same.
Until he drops.
Yep.
And so for me, coach, it's like you get a lot of the, just the normal questions every day.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking to clients, the other day, you know, hey, Brady, your kid's got to be getting interested in basketball right about now, right? He's probably really excited. It's like, I'm pretty sure I've told you in the past that he's autistic.
Yeah.
And that's just not something, an organized sporting event is not something that's right now in the cards for him, in the stars for him. So you do get to the point where you sometimes will answer, and then other times you're like, yeah, things are going well.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of, so I think that's part of that isolation, because you almost, sometimes you just bypass that conversation because it gets old.
You can see it coming, right?
Yeah.
Like I'll be talking to someone that kind of knows me or knows I'm the coach or whatever, and they're genuinely interested in me and what I'm doing and all that. And then say, oh, how many kids do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And then I start into it. And you don't say right away, well, I've got a real challenge at home with one of my kids, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I've got three daughters. We had them first, this age, here's what they're doing. We've got a 16-year-old boy who's, you know, still in the home with us right now in Greeley and goes to Greeley West. And I just kind of usually leave it at that. And sometimes that's it. But then say, oh, does he play football?
He's got to be loving football.
It's like, we would consider it a major accomplishment if we could get him potty trained during his, you know, lifetime.
Yeah.
Football's not in the cards.
And the other thing too, coach, it's amazing the things that we hold on to, you know, that are different. My kid's 8 and, you know, he likes to jump on the trampoline nonstop, and he likes me to be in there with him and bounce him up and down. Well, I get tired faster than he does. So I'm like, we got to take breaks. So I'll say, we either sing a song, we count to whatever, 30, we do our ABCs or something like that. And that is such a major milestone for us.
Mm.
So when you tell people about that don't understand that an 8-year-old, you know, he can do his ABCs. He can count to 50, he can count to 100. That's absolutely huge for us to be able to do that. And when you tell people, some people are like, that's amazing, depending on the person you're talking to. And then another person's like, oh, okay, interesting.
Some lights start to go off.
Yeah.
And it's all, like I said, it's all well intended.
Yes.
It's just, I think even for us as parents, even though we've had that, you know, quote unquote, that conversation so many times, it's still awkward because we have to find a balance of, well, how much do they share? Are some of these questions just like a, hey, how you doing? It's kind of rhetorical. Or are they really asking what's going on at home? And do you share that? And kind of almost feel like you're burdening someone else with, well, here's what I'm going through at home. But for me, it's just reality. It might seem, you know, horrifying to somebody else. Some of the things that my wife and I and our daughters deal with on a daily basis, but it's not. It's our reality. We love our son, love who he is. It's hard to imagine being able to give him a pill or push a button, have him be cured. And obviously we would do it because we think there may be pain or involved or realization or frustration on his part. We're not sure, but there may be. And so we would do it if there was a pill, but also we would lose something, because that's how we know him, right? It is the reality, and we love him for who he is.
Yeah. And that's why these kind of nights are good. And the camp too, the No Limits camp. How long have you guys been doing that now?
Since the day that I got, so I'll maybe have told this story before, but it would have been maybe a couple of years ago. Almost the first interview I gave, I talked about when I got the job here 4 years ago, I talked about doing a football camp for special needs kids. And okay, full disclosure, my vision was like, we already do all these days of camps. We do about 10 days of other types of camps. Mm-hmm. As a staff. We have high school teams come in. We have recruits, or what we call our mega camp. It's kind of a targeted showcase type of camp. We have a youth camp. All kinds of kids here. Thousands of kids come through to do UNC football camps every summer. My vision was we should create resources so that we have like one of our fields be for special needs kids, you know. And it what it has grown into. All credit. First, Jen Lieber is a special ed counselor at UNC. She reached out right away by email, was like, introduced herself. Hey, I noticed a few things in common. You've got a special needs child. You were an English major, so was I. Now I work in special needs. We would love to have your student athletes come into our major. And you mentioned doing a special needs football camp. I would like to meet with you on that. I would like to support that. And I have a friend, Lori Couch, who you need to talk to. Mm. And then, you know, so a Lori shows, like, I didn't know Lori, but I know her now, and it makes perfect sense. She showed up with a typed, bulleted pamphlet of discussion points. I had never met her, never talked about any of this in any detail with anybody. And she just ran with it. And at that time, she was working with the ARC of, I think it's called the ARC of Northeast Colorado now. It was the ARC of Weld County at that time, and now it's the ARC of Northeast Colorado. And now she's with Avery's Light, and Avery's Light is now the major sponsor of the No Limits Camp. And boy, what it has become is just like super humbling. I almost have to stop myself from telling everybody who comes and thanks me for this camp on the camp day. I say it several times, but sometimes when I stop myself, because I always just have to explain, like, this is really not my baby. Like, Lori and I met a month ago, and I was kind of like, catch me up, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, full disclosure, this is all credit due to her, and then, you know, Eddie Gonzalez before our current DFO, Brooke Richards. So they do a lot of the work, the liaisoning with the campus and with Lori and her vision. And it's amazing. I feel more a part of it than being able to take some kind of credit for it's my camp or even my idea, because this was not the idea. It's much bigger than the idea I had.
It's such a great, well, and again, you know, again, Lori's phenomenal. A lot of these people involved are phenomenal. We've dealt with Lori so much here at the station, but you sell yourself short a bit, because even just bringing it to light is bringing something like this to light and putting it out there in the universe that this is something we could potentially do. And then people hear that and that's when the spark goes. And that's when people that, cause you're organizing a million things on the football side of things. That's when people that have an expertise in this area, like Lori, can come in and really take the idea, or maybe not even the idea, just the mention of it, and actually put the concept to, you know, in action. And it's a great team effort.
Yeah, I definitely see it as something that's become one of my, or part of my purpose. You know, the purpose of me being alive and who I am, and maybe the platforms that I have as the football coach at UNC at this time, you know, definitely one of those is to bring awareness to the special needs community, the challenges, and look, odds are, right, at 105 players a year that I'm coaching, the statistics say that many of my players, many of the players on our team will have special needs kids with all types of different challenges.
Yeah.
And for them to know and see my son, they see him at my home when they come to my house. They see him at times. We'll bring him to practice just for a few moments, because that's about all you know, that would be safe for anybody for him to be there. And then at this camp, they get exposed to much more. And I hope that, you know, down the road, it's making a difference for these young guys.
This is what, you know, again, like a night like tonight, having you there, there's just so, and I've talked about this with a lot of people in the community, just about it. There is something about, hey, this is a Division I football coach who dealing with some of the same thing a lot of us parents of special need kiddos do. There is something powerful about that, you know, and I know you don't like to toot your own horn in that area, but there, especially a lot of dads look at a Division I football coach. And I mean, we always just look at those guys. We look at you guys like, you guys are drill sergeants, man. You got everything perfect. Not that you have everything perfect, but everything needs to be perfect. And then when we hear your real story, there's something really powerful. And I've told this story several times. We met with a very good client of ours, and we were talking to him about some exciting things we want to do next year, like for the Weber State game, that first Friday night football game. And the guy's like, you know, I haven't really had a strong connection with UNC football over the years. Just haven't. And Tanner was with me on this meeting, our morning show host, and we start talking about you. And I said, you know, the first thing I saw was the video of you riding horses with your son. And I think a local news outlet around BYU at the time had done this piece. I don't even know how I found it. And that hit me because around that time, you know, we were starting to come to the realization that our kid was autistic and we were going to have some interesting challenges. So we're telling this guy this story. He's like, my nephew is autistic, and I'm really passionate about anybody that supports that. Suddenly the guy is getting like emotional, and we're like, this coach is the real deal. He's an excellent coach. He's a great human, but he also really, you know, he buys into a lot of these, the real things that he's talking about as far as helping some of these kids, or at least highlighting the fact. And so long story short, the guy's like, well, I want to get involved. So that's the kind of thing that I think is really powerful, can move mountains too, is like you're going to connect with people that you maybe wouldn't have normally connected with.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, like, I don't know who that is, and it sounds like maybe you'll talk about putting the name out. But, yeah, it's like those anyone who has those kind of stories. The dad's night out, we could probably be opened up to, you know, dads and uncles and anybody that cares about, because they all have stories. And these kids can touch you once you get to know them, because you can see the moments of happiness that are different than typical kids, the moments of frustration that are different, and it's emotional to know and love any of these kids that have these kind of challenges, and an eye opener for all the advantages that I say we in the typical space have.
Yeah, no question. Well, I appreciate you kind of going there with me, and I look forward to tonight, Coach, because, again, you and I, we do this podcast, but we don't really get together that much.
Right.
Because your schedule's absolutely nuts, and it just doesn't always cross over. So I'm looking forward to this. I think this will be a lot of fun.
Me too.
Last week, you also, speaking of, you know, getting the team over to your place, you were, like, running all over the place last week to prepare for this. How did the... It was Friday night, wasn't it? Wasn't it Friday night?
Yep, Friday night.
How did that go?
Total party of 200.
Yeah,
Live band. We had all of the support staff, those that kind of, the way we kind of drew the line in terms of, well, what athletic department personnel should we have there? And we drew the line with those who are kind of more in a service-oriented role. And so I found myself, like the day before or something, trying to explain to my boss, Darren Dunn, like why he wasn't, you know, invited. Mm. And the president, Andy, Andy's at, like, there must be three or four Andys because he's at everything, you know, like, I don't know how he does it. And so, but they're not necessarily in a service role. They do serve the players, no doubt, maybe more than anyone around, but they're administrators and leaders, and they're kind of, you know, top down in terms of a flow chart, if you will. They're on top of the players and make policies and things like that. And so it really wasn't that. It was the ones who kind of serve and interact with our players on a daily basis, trainers, facilities managers, equipment, you know, that was the kind of that rounded out that 200 plus all the coaches. And anyway,
that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Yeah. And then we had a couple of, you know, key kind of supporters who have, you know, financially gotten behind the players and wanted them and their families to experience our players. And the feedback on that was fantastic because the players have changed like so much. I mean, you just look at the team GPA right now. We're right scratching the surface of a 3.5. That's coming all the way from a 2.4. It's a different group of young men. You know, not that, you know, I was closer to the other side. You know, like, so I'm not being judgmental, but I'm just saying when you've got a group of team GPA 3.5 guys, that's a group that kind of knows what they're going to do after football. They've got a lot of values. The football might be super important to them or is super important to them, but it's just one part of their lives and they're very well-rounded. And that's the type of young men that I've had success with. So that's the type of team I purposefully build. We impose our own GPA standard. We could get in a minimum qualifier to UNC, a minimum NCAA qualifier 2.0. We don't go anywhere near those.
When you talk about these types of events where you have all the guys out at your place, how common is that for coaches across the nation to have something like that, to do something like that?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to have a big piece of property where we can do it, you know, and there's a huge cottonwood that kind of meets the back of my house, which all faces the east. And so in the evening, the afternoon, I got the tremendous area of shade. Mm. And I think that would be the limiting factor for most coaches. I don't think it's normal or common. In fact, it's one of my recruiting, you know, in the recruiting process, there are a lot of head coaches that will go and travel and do home visits with the player and their families. And it was some time ago that I started to feel like that was a question that I wasn't comfortable with, inviting myself into somebody else's home. This was back when I was an assistant. And some people would be really about it, and I could see the hesitation in others, right? And so I gave myself the freedom, even as an assistant, you know, that wasn't a required part of recruiting. You know, to be available for that and to take recruits and their parents up on an invitation is one thing, but to expect that they invite you into their home.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll get that question during the recruiting process is, hey, so-and-so came to our house. You know what I mean? Like whoever it is, you know, Jay Norvell came to our house. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you come to our house? And I'll say, well, did you go to Jay Norvell's house or did you? I shouldn't be using Jay. Like, that's dumb.
No,
I'm just trying to use a local coach that everybody knows.
And you might have had recruiting run-ins in the past. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then I will say, talk to our players. Every one of our players has been to my house. And so that's, I think, where I want to be in the space I want to be. It's one of the cool things about being a head coach is I can decide how we're going to do it. And it doesn't have to be just like the NCAA rule book. It can be custom fit to what we need at UNC. And then typically I'll tell all of those players, you know, hey, come back, you know, come get some farm fresh eggs, some duck eggs, come ride the horses.
Well, you've had several guys say that. When we were bringing players in a lot last summer, it was, I ride horses out there sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. And that's the idea is like, not just, hey, there's one party a year you get to go to Coach Lamb's house or you have to go. Maybe they look at it that way.
Yeah.
It's, no, fellas, here's where I live. My home is open to you. I trust you with my family and, come anytime. I mean, I'm getting ready to say, like, come knock on my door anytime. But nowadays we got our phones, you know.
Yeah.
We're all just a couple of taps away from being in contact. But I think the idea is that I'm here for you, and it's more than just, 4 hours a day of practice and meetings that we can interact.
Well, and there's a buy-in. I think that really adds to the buy-in portion of this, too, is like, man, that coach is actually willing to have – he really wants me to actually come out there. You're not just saying that.
Yeah.
You know, you're spending time with these guys, and there's a – you know, they have fun. They have fun with the agricultural side, too. I mean,
sure.
You were showing me – pretty awesome graphic there based on your very first press conference, your introductory press conference,
right,
talking about the asparagus. We've certainly leaned in on that as a station.
You have.
And it's cool to see, like, your players are leaning in on the whole asparagus. Like, you basically saying, hey, we're going to be here and we're going to build this thing up from the ground up. And that's where you made that connection with the asparagus.
Yeah, I was telling you before that we started here, one of the players, Levi Johnson, his dad made kind of an edit or a graphic, and with this the asparagus and the helmet and the mountains behind and harvest time, and it's really cool graphic. But even cooler than that is, you know, when I talked about that in my opening press conference, it wasn't something I'd say, oh, we're going to come back to this. We're going to put it on T-shirts and hats. We're going to,
you know. It did not feel that way at all.
The radio show. No, it was unscripted. It was a way of saying, like, look, I'm here. And because I think there were questions about, okay, well, people that understand the business probably know that I was making quite a bit more money as an assistant at BYU than I'm making as a head coach here. And then, okay, yeah, so you want to be a head coach, but maybe there were just questions. How long do you plan to stay? Yeah. What are you going to, you know, what does this challenge look like for you? And that was just my way of saying, like, look, I'm here for a long-term rebuild. I would have loved to go undefeated, win a national championship in year one, but, you know, just the way we set about this process was always to build something that would last. And so it wasn't going to be through the transfer portal. It wasn't going to be any quick fixes with the benefit of more, you know, using more resources than the previous staffs or the other staffs in our conference. It was just going to be about player development, which I hope that timeline will be as quickly as possible to be successful on the field. But it really is, when you talk about recruiting high school players and developing them, you know, there are not a lot of freshmen and sophomores that are playing at the highest level of the Big Sky.
Yeah.
You know, it's that junior, senior, redshirt senior year where guys really start to thrive and dominate. And that's where our first couple of recruiting classes are now. And I really do believe in the harvest time mentality. But it's been even cooler to have, you know, you or Tanner or now, you know, kids, parents on the team. They are catching that vision and really have taken it further than I intended.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, again, that first press conference, like you said, that wasn't something that you, because I've seen a lot of opening press conferences, right. And guys will, I mean, I'm not going to mention the guy, but, you know, he's like talking about, hey, you take this fist and this fist, it comes together and it forms this animal. And you could tell it was like, but with you, that was something that you really kind of put some thought into, but didn't script it as a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, and it was genuine. You could really feel that. But a lot of times those things that you're not anticipating being, you know, viewed as I hate to even say the word gimmick, but people pick up on that kind of stuff because they like that kind of stuff.
You know, my number one, part of my job is training the young coaches that work with me, really all the coaches, but a lot of the coaches are further along. They know who they are. They're operating in a certain way. I hired them because of who they have become as coaches. Other coaches, I'm taking them from players or graduate assistants to full-time coaches. And one of the things I commonly kind of share with them is, you know, I need you to be compelling, charismatic, but not extra. Can you walk that fine line, right? Because those coaches that I've been around that are just caricatures of a cartoon, you know, it's like, that's, to me, players will respond to their face and laugh at their jokes and, you know, straighten up when they need to straighten up. But like, they don't truly respect that kind of coach. And I don't think, just if I try to put myself in the shoes of a fan, somebody that's interested, a supporter, I don't want that either. You know what I mean? So I don't want to hear, hopefully you don't hear me talking in coaching cliches.
No.
I try to be very open about, you know, like what we're trying to accomplish, my own struggles, you know, mentally with challenges that we're dealing with, because I think that does make a longer term difference in a group of players who actually know who I am and my coaches around me and will fight for us and with us and stand alongside us, because we didn't invent ourselves because of some movie that we watched about Bear Bryant, you know, and the way he interacts.
Yeah. Well, and again, like your connection here with the station, you and I have a different relationship than you have a relationship with Tanner over there, who just says whatever the hell he wants anytime. Right. But we cracked up at that because we had a guy with us and we love him. He was doing UNC stuff for us, and he kind of slipped up and he called Tanner's show in your press conference. You know, he introduced Tanner or something, and he says, you know, Tanner does the ag show.
He does an ag show.
Oh, it was so funny because we always give Tanner crap. And from that moment, you're like, oh, that's the ag guy.
I got so excited about it, right? Because like I'm this like hobby farmer, and
and I don't remember exactly how, because I know it was our guy Blake Olson, good dude. I don't know exactly what he said or how he said it, but it was so funny. And then we have ran with that too. Yeah. We've given each other crap about that. You've golfed with Tanner before, and that's just like you're a real guy. And not to say other coaches aren't, but there is something, especially in this community, that makes that extremely powerful. Just like I said, having this conversation with this guy the other day, it wasn't really about your playbook or your depth chart ideas or how you're going to change. It was a lot more about the person. And I think that's what this community really needed in a football coach.
When I like daydream about getting to the pinnacle, and because the Big Sky is the top league in the nation, the pinnacle is and the most well-funded league in our nation, right? Yeah. Like Montana State has the largest budget in FCS football right now, and the defending national champion. And by the way, the difference in athletic department budgets is $10 million per year. You know, so I tell boosters that all the time, like, appreciate what you're doing, but like here's the reality. If you gave me a suitcase right now with $10 million, it would only catch us up for a year. We would need another $10 million next year.
Yeah.
That's how far away that we are behind. But fortunately, it's not a direct correlation between dollars and wins. And I've lived this before. And when I daydream, night dream, whatever, about reaching that pinnacle of getting to the top of this conference of FCS football, it never crosses my mind that somebody would pat me on the back and say, man, you're really an offensive genius, or you're really a defensive genius. Like, that is so far off my radar. I have coaches that work nonstop on that part of the game. What the compliment that I hope to get is it's amazing the players that you've been able to put together here.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'll hear it as building. You know, everybody thinks it's recruiting because that's what gets attention. We're not really you're recruiting as much as we're selecting the right kids who we know are going to become the right men. And there's power in that because everybody else in our league is recruiting. And so we're doing a completely different thing. We still call it recruiting. We still work really hard at that part of it, but we are truly selecting. We're getting out and finding the right candidates and then selecting those candidates into UNC. And we're generally not going head to head with what we're looking for because it's different than what everybody else is looking for.
Yeah, because you guys are looking for, obviously you're looking for good football players, but there's so much, there's so many more things that are a part of that too. And again, I go back to it when you brought in so many different players last year, they all, and this is a compliment, they all shared a lot of similarities in how they talked about what they're interested in and what they're interested in when it comes to football. And these were all very positive, wholesome things that they're, you know, their hobbies. A lot of these guys were characters. They were fun. That's what I got from the group. Yeah. And it was just this overwhelming sense of togetherness, I guess, and just buy-in and belief to what's going on with this program.
I really quiz our upperclassmen, you know, Jack Z-Bell is actually the way you say his name, but his nickname is Z-Ball. He's been our starting center since his true freshman year. Legacy kid, both parents went here to UNC. And, you know, because he, you know, our first quarterback, Jacob Sermon, and he was snapping to Jacob in the very first game of his college career, right? He's seen it all. He's seen the building of the team, the building of the character, the GPA, the work ethic, the buy-in from the players. He's seen it all. And as the highest rated center in all of football, all of college football last year, and but you know, particularly FCS football, he could have cashed that in for a major opportunity at the Power Four level. I believe the difference that he's going to make in his life for staying here and probably influencing all the rest of our very experienced now offensive line.
Yeah.
And what that's going to mean in terms of success on the field and the feeling that they actually built it. I've talked about this before. I played at BYU. We had amazing seasons. I've championship rings. We won 14 games my senior year. It never crosses my mind that I helped build the BYU football team. You know, like, it existed as a high-level football program before I was born. every time I leave, they still win without me, you know, whether I'm there as a coach or a player or whatever. Our story at Southern Utah was different. And that's what we're trying to recreate here is a place that, you know, doesn't have a tradition of winning. Can you put together the right chemistry, the right group of men who just tirelessly work toward this audacious, unlikely goal and then achieve that?
Yeah.
And to hear, Z-Ball talk about the changes in the program. Really cool because I know you because just it's your job. Some of what you've covered and paid attention to are the changes between the last couple of coaches.
Yeah.
And that always makes me a little uncomfortable because I spend no time trying to figure out how Coach McCaffrey did it or Coach Collins before him. They had a different group of challenges, et cetera. But just to talk now to some of these veterans about how it's changed just from the timeline of when I got here until now and the buy-in from the players, it's so encouraging for me.
And I know you don't like getting in, but it's just night and day difference. And it's not a knock on the previous coach necessarily, but it's just the buy-in that, like, even us as a station feel from you, your willingness to come here early in the morning and do these podcasts and talk about your football program and handle all of our stupid questions every single week and with the morning show. That is the buy-in that I think a lot of community members throughout this area feel. Your willingness on a Friday night when you got 4 million things to do to drive to Windsor and go, you know, talk to dads and hang out, talk about whatever is part of it. But you carry that with you with your program too. And that's what, if we're buying into it, I can imagine that's double, if not triple, with the players and your assistant coaches.
They know we're all in. There's no question. Our players know we're all about them. I might may come across sometimes on this microphone or this show or the radio or whatever, just like supremely confident about everything we're doing. But you know that several times I'll come in and go, is this still worth it for you?
Yeah.
Do you think anyone's listening?
You've asked me that before. And I'm like, I get to sit across from a Division I football coach and talk football, life, whatever, every single week. So I'm like, yeah, it's worth it. And of course, the downloads, people really enjoy it. If we miss a show, it's like, where's the Football 52 podcast? So, it's one of those things where we've just loved doing it. It's a high honor for us to be able to get it. When, you know, in the past, even with UNC, it was like, gotta wait 2 weeks with schedule to getting a coach on, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was not as easy. Not to say they weren't available to us, but this availability has been something else. And even for Coach Smiley, he heard about us doing this podcast, and he's like, "Dude, I want to do something like that. Yeah. That's great." So, it's been a lot of fun on that side of it too.
That's great. I'm glad he's doing it, and I've listened to his before. And it's a lot. It's amazing. You same host, but significantly different in
different
terms
vibe.
Of just the vibe, the flow, and the way that works. And he's a coach. Smiley's he's a awesome guy. We golf together in league night on Tuesday nights and get to know the community that way. It's a really powerful way to get to know so many different guys. But he, he's a very strong personality.
Yeah.
But also very easygoing.
Yep.
It's difficult to describe. You know, like he hits a bad shot in basketball, and it's just like next shot.
Yep.
You know, he just moves right on.
He's got so much energy. He came in here yesterday because he knows about our stupid dirty 30 bet. You know about it too. Yeah. And he walks in, and he's always like, "Let's talk Bears." And then he walks in, and he looks at me and goes, "Bears." Beards and beer. I don't know. And he's just like pumped up, ready to go, man. And
he's got juice.
And of course,
made a great football coach.
Yeah, he does. And his guy up in Wyoming too, like one of his best friends, Sundance Wicks. You think Coach Smiley has energy? My gosh, I've had Sundance on a few times. It's crazy. But I'll tell you, Coach, on the beard thing, I know I've reached the point of it's not looking good anymore. Coach Smiley, I don't know if you've seen the movie Anchorman. He said, "You look like Will Ferrell in the movie Anchorman when he gets fired and he just gives up on life and he grows the beard out. He's drinking milk on a 100-degree day." So that was good. That's when you know you've reached the bad point of the dirty 30 bed.
I keep mine pretty trimmed up, and on occasion when I shave it, like especially during the summer, sometimes I'll just like, okay, it's time to shave. Nobody really notices, you know. You're at that point where when you shave this thing,
oh, yeah.
People are gonna be like, Brady, is that you?
My wife, she said to me the other day, and I mean, she's amazing. She's very honest with me though, and she goes, "It does make your face look bigger." That's what she told me. I'm like, well, come on.
Yeah.
Two more.
Let's dive into that word.
Yeah, what is that? Is that fat? Yeah, is that what we're talking about here? But no, we've
haven't heard anybody aspire to be big faced.
No, so. I definitely, and that's something I don't want actually is to be big faced. So, and working outside all the time, it's getting insane. But no, like that's the fun stuff. Like we can give each other crap on that side of it. I've had so many different coaches on where you joke about that and they just kind of give you a quick chuckle and move on. Let's get back to talking about my program.
Yeah.
And we love talking about your program, but you're also willing to talk about the stupid stuff that we want to bring up on occasion here.
The people should do tours through this place. You know, Brian and Tanner getting together, add Micah in on occasion. Micah, he kind of comes and goes. I don't know what the deal is.
I don't either. But, I don't know. My favorite memory of that, too, is when you filled it. You jumped in as a co-host with me, which I loved, and I want to do that again. Michael and I were going at each other, and you were like, visibly uncomfortable for a second. You're like, holy, you're really laying into it.
I was
him.
In the line of fire.
Yeah, and we got off the air, and I'm like, no, it's fine. Yeah. He's used to it. It's good for him. Builds character.
Yeah, people, hopefully, a lot of these people that might be listening to this podcast also listen to your show.
One of our
aware of some of those dynamics, or else they're just like, man, get back to Bears football.
Yeah. and again, there's once we cross over probably like into July, it's going to be more like Bears football. You know, days like this, we can talk a little bit about life and some of that's what we talked about too when we sat down and decided to do this podcast. It's like, hey, let's mix in football. Let's talk about our parenting struggles and whatever, but also issues going on in college sports in specifics. But as we get closer to the season, it's going to kind of the show tilts and we get more into the specifics, talking about the game and all that. And of course, we don't want to give the game plan away on the podcast, but it does kind of, the tone of the show kind of changes as we progress and get closer to the season.
Well, that's certainly coming for anybody who's curious about that. Our coaches are working a lot more, dedicating a lot more of every day right now to our first several opponents, the game plan, the off-season scouting, which is, it's nothing like in-season scouting, but it's a real task, and there's a lot of work that goes into it and a lot of guesswork. And so it's a little bit, can be unnerving because you have no idea what especially the first opponent is actually going to look like, who's going to run out on the field. By the time you get to game 4, 5, and 6, there are tendencies and strengths, and the opponent knows those strengths and tendencies, and you know, there's quite a chess match going on. But early in the season in game 1, there is a lot of guesswork and then adjusting on the fly. So we're putting a lot of work into that. I look forward to in the coming weeks starting to go over some of those first few opponents and the strengths and weaknesses and storylines within the game.
Yeah, Weber State coming up.
Weber
and I know
State, game 1.
We've got some plans. We're hoping we can make this work, but we want to, I don't know if we'll set up the morning show out there, but ideally I'd love to do my show out there because I know the tailgating is going to be starting throughout the day. Get our Rocky Mountain College kickoff show out there that afternoon and just build this thing up because the Bears are going to be playing under the lights for the first time at Nottingham Field coming up with that first game of the season against Weber State.
It's such an incredible opportunity to a milestone, a stepping stone for the program. There's tremendous pressure, and that maybe hasn't existed in that way, you know? And so I'm all about it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Coach, while I have you here, next week maybe we can get it because the whole Soresby stuff, we talked about that last week. But just quickly, you know, Texas Tech, Soresby, they're kind of saying, hey, we came together and decided it's probably not worth the fight here because the Big 12 was kind of putting pressure on Texas Tech. Soresby will enter the supplemental draft and thus ending at least that chapter. We'll see what happens in the NFL for him. But it was. I think we both would agree that was something that needed to happen, that he shouldn't – a guy that's gambling on sports, especially his own team, shouldn't probably be playing – college sports.
I consider myself like fairly measured when, especially speaking in public or on record like this. Yeah. And when we ended the podcast last week, I was a little bit concerned about whether I'd stepped out of my lane talking about, you know, another college. In fact, I said, hey, I'm going on record. Texas Tech has been hot. They're going down. This is the beginning of the end. That coach is going down because he's allowing things now. He's allowing people to break the rules. And where do you draw the line once you allow that and support that and defend that? And I felt like I really came strong about somebody else's business, which I don't often do.
Yeah.
But I was asked the question, and I also want to be authentic and real, and I felt really strongly about it. And so it's going to be it was interesting that all the backtracking now, because it seems like they heard, not us, but they heard America and the sporting world and have really backed down from trying to make that a go.
Well, that was the line, because for so many other things, coaches do, because you don't want to burn any bridges. You don't want to put down another program or anything like that. There's a million things that you might internally think are wrong with how a person's doing things or how a school's handling their business, but it's not something you're really promoting or talking or highlighting. But this was that thing. There's a college bill coming out. We've talked about it, that has 30 different things on there that we could all agree might be an issue in college sports, but we're not talking about it as much. This gambling thing, I think, was so gigantic. Coaches like you just couldn't sit back, and you had to, if you're asked about it, yeah, we are going to talk about it, because you start allowing players that gamble on games to continue to play, it could be a significant downfall for the sport, for your career too, for your livelihood.
Coach Edwards used to say to us, you'll be treated fairly, but not equally. And then you kind of learn that as you're there, you know, the veteran guys, the higher performers, the bigger, stronger, faster guys, they might be given more slack in certain areas, but never with team rules. And that's where that fairness comes in. So can a bigger, stronger, faster guy make a few more mistakes? That's being treated fairly, because what they're bringing to the game could be potentially worth the mistakes.
Yeah.
Some of the mistakes, right? There's a line. But in terms of team rule or NCAA rules, you know, Coach Edwards would have never put up with anything unfair. Unequal, yes, but not unfair. And so I hope I'm explaining that okay.
Yeah,
but that
100%.
To me, that crossed a line when Texas Tech allowed Sorsby to gamble and then went in a support mode for him and said, We're gonna allow that all to have happened, and then you know, not hold him accountable for that in the way that the NCAA would wish us to. And I just don't know when you start redrawing that line of fairness, because to me, it's a very clear standard, the difference between equal and fair. I can see it. I don't know if I explain it well, but I can
see
it.
Well, and again, if you allow one guy to do it, and then if another guy does, because Cincinnati saying, hey, we had six, there's this, I know we don't have time to get into it now, but there's an app or a system they're using that will notify them. You're familiar with this. You guys use something like this that will notify them if a player is utilizing a gambling app.
Well,
Cincinnati is saying, we were dinged in 2024 six times. One of those times was on Sorsby, and we went and asked him about it, and he said, no, the site, I didn't end up doing it because the site locked me out, so I didn't actually gamble. And we could argue whether that should have been a giant red flag for Cincinnati. He didn't say he didn't do it. He said he was locked out of it, so he was trying to do it. Should Cincinnati have been more aggressive in their approach there? But now that's obviously the issue. So right there, you said six different guys potentially were thinking about gambling. So if you allow one that actually did it to do it, then to me that opens the floodgates. And if you get caught, you can just say, I have an addiction. They helped Sorsby out. Why are you not helping me out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. That's a great way to say it. Yeah. Those programs do exist. So it's third party, a contracted partner who keeps very close track of all of the athletes in the NCAA and coaches. And you will be found out. I think this is one of the areas that you have no chance of getting away with.
Yeah.
And all of our players hear that, know that, they see the numbers, and so hopefully they're in tune to it. You never know who's listening and who's not. That's why it's really helpful to my sleep and comfort to have high GPA, high performing young men who care about their future and not just, you know, living for today.
Yeah, know, and again, a lot of the guys that we talked to last week, their hobbies, it's not really even watching a ton of other sports outside of what they need to watch. These guys are fishing. Yeah. You know, they're hiking. They're doing a lot of that stuff. Healthy alternatives to some of those things. So, Coach, we covered a lot of ground today, man. I'm looking forward to tonight.
Yes.
And we'll catch up. And, you know, who knows? Well, hopefully a lot of dads come out and hang out with us for a while and share war stories together, depending on what your situation is.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
All right, my friend. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.